You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. In the wake of the chaotic and deadly withdrawal from Afghanistan in August of 2021 that claimed the lives of 13 service members and 170 civilians as the country fell under Taliban rule, the U.S. government granted thousands of Afghans temporary protected status, or TPS, which prevented them from being deported back to their home country. But that status is coming to an end. Department of Homeland Security Secretary Kristi Noem decided to terminate TPS for Afghanistan, saying that the country no longer meets the requirements for the designation and that allowing Afghans to stay in the United States temporarily is against the country's best interests. That protected status designation expired last week, and the termination goes into effect on July 14th. And these changes have sent shockwaves here in Sacramento, which is home to one of the largest Afghan communities in the country. Jesse Mabry is the CEO of Opening Doors, which supports immigrants, refugees, and survivors of trafficking. And Koban Kochai is a board member at the nonprofit who immigrated from Afghanistan in the 1980s. Welcome to you both.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
So, Jesse, I want to start just with something that seems pretty simple, because there's lots of ways where an individual can establish residency in the United States and they can get conflated and it can be confusing. So what is temporary protected status, or TPS, and how is it different than the other ways people can establish residency here?
Sure. TPS, or temporary protected status, is temporary relief from deportation back to one's home country because for whatever reason that country is deemed to be too unsafe to deport people back to. So it might be in case of a civil war or, you know, environmental disaster or something along those lines. So it's not necessarily a secure, and it's certainly not a permanent status, but it is a relief from deportation.
How many countries have TPS?
As of the end of last year, there were 16 countries that had TPS, so Venezuela, Haiti, Ukraine, Afghanistan, along with some others, for a total of about 860 or 870,000 individuals under TPS from across those 16 countries.
Okay, so that's close to a million. How did Sacramento become one of the largest communities for Afghans and Afghan refugees in the country? Koban, I'll start with you.
Well, I think that Sacramento has a very welcoming environment. There have been Afghans here for a long period of time, and something about the Afghan community is that we tend to go where other Afghans are. So, you know, I think there's family reunification involved there. There's resources here. There's, you know, restaurants and businesses that cater to the Afghan community. And no matter, I think, where folks settle in the United States, a lot of people hear about Sacramento and they tend to go, you know, where their community is. And so I think that's one of the reasons that folks have really come to this area.
What would you like people to know about your journey arriving to the United States and also specifically Sacramento?
Yeah, you know, I think my journey is one of very similar to what some folks are going through right now and still in this generation from Afghanistan. I came here as a refugee myself, and we immigrated to the South, actually, in Alabama is where we ended up settling, my family and I. We ended up coming to California because we heard there's a large Muslim community here. At that time, it was in the Fremont, the Bay Area, where a lot of Afghans were. And so we, you know, trekked sort of from Alabama, came out to California to be a part of that community. And what I'd like people to understand, I think, about the strife of the Afghan people over the last, you know, 40 years is that, you know, we're a community that has been displaced for so long now. And, you know, that I always say there's probably no corner of the earth that you can go to where you're not going to find an Afghan or an Afghan family, you know, trying to build their life. Where we settle into, you know, we create community, we create networks, we bring positive energy and, positivity to those areas. And, you know, I'm an example of that. There's, you know, many stories out there very similar to that. and that, you know, Afghans and, you know, the refugees don't go by choice. You know, we're pushed out of our country. You know, my village was bombed. I was a refugee in Pakistan with alongside my family for many years. We lost many family members, you know, before we came out here. So it wasn't a choice that we made. We were pushed into that. And so, you know, once you're in a country and you're hoping for a positive future, you're going to do your best to build that out. And I think that the community that you come into and the countries that say they're going to give back to these communities have a responsibility to live up to those commitments and to provide opportunity and stability when, you know, refugees don't have a choice in the matter.
The war in Afghanistan was 20 years, and when the Biden administration decided to withdraw from Afghanistan, which was a chaotic withdrawal, it was a deadly withdrawal. In the years since the last almost 4 years now, when you talk to, you know, fellow Afghans and refugees, I know you mentioned 40 years. That's a long time. So people come at different times in their life, right, and at different times in history. How have they been feeling the past, you know, 3.5 years after this?
You know, there's so much, right? It's so much trauma. You know, there's sort of that fear that came with them, you know, having to flee their country under such difficult circumstances, because there is a real threat to the lives of these people back home. You know, you have to think about the folks that are leaving in 2021. These are folks that, you know, either worked with the U.S. forces in some way, you know, and this isn't just interpreters, it's folks like drivers, it's folks like cooks, you know, it's government folks, that government workers that, you know, that worked in the government or in civil service. And so, you know, those folks are still under danger. And so, you know, the ways that they flee and get out is just really under dire circumstances. And that creates, you know, as they've settled in here, that fear sort of builds on top of having to, you know, resettle into the country, having, you know, to figure out how to thrive and how to survive here. And so there's, I think, just layers upon layers of fear and uncertainty that are a part of that community.
And also, I would imagine if you're working with the U.S. military and for the mission of the United States, either, you know, as a cook or a driver or an interpreter, that's allyship. How is that feeling of allyship? How has it changed and evolved following 2021?
Yeah, I think there's a huge strain on the Afghan community in terms of how they're connecting and realizing, you know, who really is their ally. You know, I think the U.S. has made real promises of protection. And now that trust is really lost. I mean, I think it was lost in 2021 itself, in the way that, you know, that whole, you know, chaos ensued, how the way that the United States decided to depart from the country, and kind of the chaos that it left behind, the situations, the difficult situations that it left people in, you know, that weren't able to get onto those planes. And so there's a real loss of trust and a real feeling of betrayal towards, you know, the American people and towards the American government, because these are people that served, you know, alongside the U.S. And allied forces for 20 years. You know, they uprooted their lives. They put themselves at risk. They had family members that they lost because of the ways that they were connected, you know, to the allied forces and to this government. And then, you know, that sense of sort of betrayal for those that are left behind, but then the ones that have actually now made it here to say, okay, you know, you're here, we're going to grant you these temporary protective services. Just kidding. You know, we actually don't want you here. And, you know, we now are able to and want to deport you from the country.
Yeah, Jesse, is TPS, temporary protected status, I understand has temporary in its name. Is that just potentially a step in the process, or is it just purely meant to be temporary? If someone who is afforded TPS wants to actually call the United States home and establish legal residency here, is there a pathway and an avenue for that to happen? And is that common?
Yeah. So part of how TPS plays out in Afghans here is that, you know, as you mentioned, the chaotic withdrawal from Afghanistan in 2021 meant that there were tens of thousands of at-risk Afghans who had to be evacuated immediately, and there wasn't time to do the multi-year long refugee processing. So those Afghans entered the U.S. on humanitarian parole, which is another form of temporary immigration status. And at the time, there was a lot of advocacy and movement to try to push for the Afghan Adjustment Act, which would have granted a more durable status in a blanket wide to all of the Afghans that were evacuated. However, that was unsuccessful in Congress. And so that meant that each of those, you know, tens of thousands of Afghans had to individually adjust their status from humanitarian parole to some other form of status. At Opening Doors, about 60% of the Afghan evacuees that we welcomed ended up filing for asylum. The others would have filed for some other form of immigration relief. Over the years, because it's very challenging to apply for asylum, there is a real lack of qualified pro bono or low-cost attorneys. It's a complicated system to try to navigate. And so, you know, it could take people quite a bit of time to secure an attorney and work their way through the process. So many individuals applied for temporary protected status as a sort of band-aid protection to get them from the status they had as they entered the country on their pathway to a more permanent status.
I would also think that this process is very confusing to navigate. So I understand the announcement from the Department of Homeland Security, and I was even confused by it. So the initial announcement was posted March 21st. Secretary Noem announced deciding to terminate TPS for Afghanistan. It said that TPS, temporary protected status, that designation would expire on May 20th, so 9 days ago, but the termination will be effective July 14th. Can you walk us through that? What does all of that mean, especially the last two steps, the expiration and then the effectiveness?
Yeah, so the process with TPS is when TPS is going to be ended, it has to be published in the Federal Register officially. And so news of the end of TPS broke and announcements were made sort of before it was published in the Federal Register, which is why we have those varying different timelines. And where things stand now is that it is set to end in July. And at that point, anyone who has TPS as their sole status, so there may be somebody who had TPS at some point, and in the intervening time, they've applied for asylum or they've, you know, pursued another form of immigration relief, they would be secure on whatever that other status is. But for any Afghans that's their sole protection is TPS, they will essentially revert back to their previous immigration status. So if they have no other status, they will revert to being undocumented and may potentially lose their work authorization as well and be potentially eligible for deportation.
Hmm. Kopan, have any of the Afghans that you've talked to who currently have TPS, do you know if they've received any instructions or any messages from federal officials about what to do and what the future holds for them?
Not any message that would provide clarity and, you know, sort of a sense of what they're supposed to do. So I understand, and, you know, folks have reached out to my husband and I that have received letters, for example, that tell them, you know, their, you know, temporary status is no longer there and they have to leave the country. Folks that fall into the asylum seekers have received these letters and others, you know, under humanitarian parole and other spaces. So to Jesse's point, I think probably anyone that's had TPS at some point might have received these types of letters. Well, what it's done is caused complete like confusion and panic in the community, because even those folks that, you know, sort of have asylum cases going, you know, some of them have received these letters and now they're like, well, you know, am I not getting asylum? Like, what should I do? And under these panic situation, folks have done all kinds of things. You know, they pulled their kids out of school thinking that they're going to, you know, their kids will be targeted in some way. They're not going to clinical visits. They're not going to seek emergency services, you know, in hospitals. They're sort of going under, you know, sort of under there, and they're hiding And there's been those folks that, you know, that have no other status at all. And so those folks, you know, have already started to lose their benefits. So I know a family, for example, that reached out that have lost their like food benefits through social services. They've lost their work permits or, you know, about to lose their work permits. So it leaves these families in these ridiculous situations where now they're food insecure. They might not even have stable housing because they have to prove to their, you know, landlords that they are documented or have, you know, some sort of job, for example. And so without a work permit or without stable jobs, you know, they're in, their housing is now in secure. Their folks are living with family members. You know, there's just all of these situations that are created that are just, you know, really, really horrible. And, you know, it overall in the community, again, it's just this sense of like fear and panic of, am I next? You know, is this going to affect me? Am I going to get a letter? Is my child safe going to school? You know, should I go get this urgent medical thing that I need and, you know, put myself in harm's way? So just a lot of fear and uncertainty.
I would think that that confusion also extends beyond Afghans that have temporary protected status, but also can create confusion among Afghans who perhaps have a green card or are going through their asylum claim as well, because it's a pretty convoluted process.
Yeah, it is a convoluted process. I have family that are now going through the asylum process, and they're calling us constantly. They're, you know, every new thing that comes through, and again, they're afraid to do their everyday, you know, functions because they're just not sure. Well, you know, am I under ICE's purview? Like, are they going to be able to touch me? So it's just, again, just a lot of confusion and uncertainty. And honestly, you know, folks don't know where to go to get those questions answered. And sometimes lawyers aren't, you know, answering them well either. And so, you know, kind of to Jesse's point of like folks not even within the legal systems not being well trained in what's happening, it's contributing towards that fear and anxiety.
You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. And if you're just joining us, we're talking with Opening Doors CEO Jesse Mabry and board member Koban Kochai about the Trump administration's decision to terminate temporary protected status for Afghanistan and the impact that it's having on Sacramento's Afghan community. So all of this has unfolded in just, you know, weeks. I mean, that's not a lot of time, and it takes effect in July, and even that is confusing. I mean, you have a lot of people in the community that reach out to Opening Doors for advice and legal advice in particular. How are you advising people that are impacted by this with just this taking effect last week and then kind of feeling like it's in limbo right now until it actually takes effect in July?
At Opening Doors, we welcomed a large number of evacuees in 2021 and 2022, and we've worked with everyone that we welcomed through our refugee resettlement program to apply for a more durable status, whether it's asylum or some other form of relief. However, if there are members of the community that are Afghan and their only status is temporary protected status, they should reach out to us, and we can try to offer a consult and see if we can find space in some of our pro se clinics or some of our legal services. We are able to, whether it's provide some support in applying for asylum or any other form of immigration relief. So they can find contact information on our website, openingdoorsinc.org. And then I think for the broader community, it's really important that our representatives know that we stand with our Afghan allies and that we are committed to providing the protection that was promised.
Has there been any action or response to the revocation of this temporary protected status by elected officials, either in California or elsewhere?
Yeah, I mean, I think that we do see that our that many elected officials and others, you know, support the continued protection for our Afghan allies. It's also important to note that there is an active court case around the end of TPS for Afghanistan and for Cameroon. Those were both announced on the same day. That that case was filed, I think, the first week of May, and that's winding its way through the system.
So the Department of Homeland Security, I mean, it argues that Afghanistan no longer meets the requirements to receive TPS status. But have there been big changes? I mean, when you keep in touch with individuals who either are Afghans living here, have family members that live in Afghanistan, which is completely understandable given that this is a diaspora community. I mean, have there been shifts in the circumstances and the safety and the way of life in Afghanistan?
Not significantly. So I was just in Afghanistan over the summer. And certainly there's a sense of more of a sense of stability because, you know, you can walk through the streets of Kabul without fear of like a bomb going off, for example. Folks are out, you know, in the bazaars and living their life to the extent that they can. But that's all under a cloud of fear. Again, that guilt by association. So for folks that have any type of connection to, you know, the allied forces, to the previous government that was in place. So I know lawyers, for example, female lawyers that did civil cases, you know, during the time of the previous government, those folks are still in grave danger. They've all gone into hiding. And so there's really not a family or, you know, or a household in Afghanistan that you'll come by where some person isn't in fear of their life. And while, you know, we folks aren't talking about it, you know, news media aren't covering these things, and it's hard for journalists to cover that sort of stuff in Afghanistan, you know, people know that it's happening. People are under threat in the country, especially those folks that have risked their lives to come out. I mean, think about it. You know, what level of desperation must you be in? What level of fear must you be in to walk across the jungles of the Amazon, you know, to come into this country or to get on the wings of a plane, you know, to evacuate and to get out of a country? Those folks, their lives are in danger. And that, you know, I don't think has significantly changed, nor has the government, the current government said, you're safe here, you know, come out of hiding. You know, we're going to protect you. You know, what's done is done, or, you know, kind of in that sort of space. That hasn't been indicated by the current government. And so these folks are they're not safe back home. And there's people in Afghanistan, families in Afghanistan right now that are still trying desperately to get out of the country because their life is in threat every day.
And that feeling, that fear, that instability, that uncertainty, I mean, that has to permeate into how you just walk through life. And yeah. What do you think the long-term impacts of this will be? Even if, say, if hypothetically it all reversed, you know, tomorrow. I would imagine there would still be impacts from this time.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, you know, mental health and the impacts of, you know, post-traumatic stress disorder and these types of traumas, especially on, you know, on the youth, on young people, and how it lasts and how it impacts them throughout their life is very well studied. You know, this doesn't go away. It's going to affect generation upon generation. It's affected my generation. It's going to affect my children and the trauma that I pass on to them because of what I've experienced, you know, as a child and in this process myself. And so that cycle is going to continue to happen until, you know, folks in the global community really stand up for refugees and really stand up and take care of these people in a way that's going to help them to feel safe in the long run. And I just think about, you know, how many more generations of Afghans are really going to be affected in this way, including the very young children and families that have come over in, you know, this most recent wave, the ways that, you know, they're affected right now and being traumatized right now, and how that's going to impact them in the long way. And we know that that stays with communities. We know that stays with families, and it is passed on until there's opportunity to really provide the types of services and social support that's needed to help heal that trauma.
Kobwan and Jesse, thank you so much for stopping by and taking the time today.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Jesse Mabry is the CEO of Opening Doors, and Kobwan Kochai is one of the nonprofit's board members and an Afghan immigrant. We have been talking about the Trump administration's decision to terminate temporary protected status for Afghanistan and the impacts that it's having on Sacramento's Afghan community. You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. We're back in just a moment.